Well, during the years, I became aware and very realistic, I have to say, that dialogue, and it doesn't mean that the conflict must be resoluted.
Mm-hmm.
And it is not the solution of the conflict. So dealing with this actually is to, I would say, to back up and to support the atmosphere of the cardinal understanding that dialogue does not mean to resolve the resolution or to solve the conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Dialogue means that where and how we can meet each other in a way that we can make the conflict more communicative.
Where I'm sorry, we can I didn't understand that word, Nimrod. More what? Make it more communicative?
Yes, exactly.
Okay,
and
more
how
communicate about it. Okay, yes.
Yes, and how we can communicate this and how to bring this interaction in a very, very humanistic and in a very, very authentic way. So I think it's that the dialogue means that you can bring the very, very hot issues into the atmosphere and the space where everyone can share this and see this and perceive this. And it doesn't mean that there has to be a fantasy that everything is talked about must be agreed upon.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
So
the
issue is how can be talked and how can be dialogued in order to handle the conflict in a very peaceful way.
I see. Okay, I think what you really pointed us to is that the dialogue does not solve the conflict. However, the goal is to be authentic and work towards a peaceful working through of the conflict. And
yes,
with
and
that,
another issue.
Oh,
that's
yes.
Actually, what another issue that maybe the common ground for me and for Robbie and for other colleagues as well, that we are scrutinizing and exploring the unconscious content of the conflict. The unconscious material that stands behind the conflict. How can explore the unconscious and bring it into awareness and mentalization in order to help us to be in a very, I would say, a very progressive dialogue.
Well, at the risk of speaking too much myself, I just want to ask you for one example of that. I think that would be a great place before we open. Do you have one example of how you've seen the unconscious in the dialogue?
Well, I don't see this as maybe Robbie, we can accompany me with this idea. I have some fragmented way of this, but I see sometimes through unconscious materials, through the unconscious, sometimes we can see the opposite, the dynamic that stands behind the conflict. Meaning by that, and to be more, to elaborate more, that sometimes in the unconscious, there is a wish, unconscious wish, that there is more than way, or there is a very promising opportunities that we can sometimes I say this in a way that we can reach agreements and maybe we can live together and maybe we can love each other, but this very fearful ideas and we have to deny it. And
Wonderful.
through the
Okay.
unconscious issues, we can outreach this content. Maybe in the unconscious, we have the opposite, but we are denying this.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. A lot of rich material here about victim and unconscious conflicts with resolution and conscious conflicts. Thank you both for your comments, and I would like to open this up so others can speak. We usually go for an hour, but since we got started late, I am going to try and keep us going, maybe an hour and 15 minutes, but if people need to leave, please feel free to do so. But I know we have so many people that would love to dialogue with you, and I want to just invite them now. Please go one at a time, and obviously in a respectful manner. Anybody want to comment or ask a question from our committee members?
This is Javi. So go ahead.
Please, I'm hearing.
This is Javi, and I do have a question for either or both. As to how, in terms of a person who is sort of absorbed in being a victim, how do you help that person to recognize the need to get past being a victim? How do you get this person somehow persuaded that he needs to abandon or somehow get beyond victimhood?
You want me to answer it?
Go right ahead. Whoever would like to start, go ahead.
Well, this goes together with what Nimer said before, that unconscious energies or contents are really at stake here, because what we found out is that the victimhood, you get it not only from your own life, you get it because you were educated, unconsciously educated in such a way. And I think the difficult times Jewish people had in the Holocaust, and the difficult time the Arab people had in 48 and later, these traumas are not just, you know, history. The history is today. It's written in our souls. So the moment if you take it just who is the victim and who is the attacker, victimizer, you take it to court, you try to solve this, you find out that in spite of people feeling that they are strong or right or anything else, they can't leave it. Why? Because it's so ingrained in our education. So it's only because we try to interpret it, you try to be aware of the legacy we had, the identifications we had with a former generation, that we can also with time leave it. Because for a Jewish person, to be also a victimizer, it's something intolerable. And only if you can understand it, that yes, you were a victim, but now you are not anymore a victim. You are in another place where your parents were, and you can separate from this identity. Then things start to open up, and paradoxically, the moment you admit to it, it's even easier to get along and start another process. Am I clear?
I think what you're saying is that from being in the victim position, you understand that you also everyone also is a victimizer. We're all both. Well, is that overstating what you said?
Of course, but in order to understand it, you have to detach from your parents' legacy, from your from identification with their former generation.
Okay. So in order to understand that, you help the person start to detach from their identity as from their parents and their bloodline, essentially.
Yes. If you can't do it.
Nima, did you want to comment on how you help people move past the identity of victim?
Well, it's a very, I would say, complicated dynamic. But I, as Robbie said, sometimes it is there is sometimes a bi-generational acquisition of the role of the victim.
Mm-hmm.
But I see it in a way that being a victim is sometimes, I see it, is a very, very, the most available defense. I say the most available defense. I see it also today. Sometimes I see it is used. There is a use and there is an abuse of the role of the victimhood.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the two sides at the time are sharing the same false dynamics about using and abusing the role of the victimhood.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to work in a very, I would say, through the groups or within the groups, each group, to understand why they are choosing to be victims. And I think it is more difficult to work with each group why they are using or abusing their role as victims than to work with the other group. It means that for myself, and to speak simply, as a Palestinian consultant, it is very difficult for me to work with Palestinians who are choosing consciously or sometimes manipulatively, in a very manipulative way, the role of the traumatized or the victims.
Mm-hmm.
It is very, very difficult than to work as a Palestinian consultant with Jews who are choosing themselves to be victims.
Mm-hmm.
The amount and the intensity of the transference inside the group of being Palestinian who are working with Palestinians and trying to put off their defenses through the using of their victimizations and being victim and to be a victim of the process, it is a very, very sometimes, I say that, very threatening experience. It is not an easy part of myself. Sometimes I was very rejected, and mm-hmm. even was attacked by Palestinian or Arab participants who didn't want me at all to bring them into the mind of scrutinize and to explore why they are choosing to be victims at this point of the dynamic.
Could I insert something here?
Sure. Who is that speaking?
This is Tim Hicks. Hi.
Great, Tim.
I hesitate to say anything because it's such a complex subject and we have so little time, and I don't want to take up your time because I'm sure everybody has lots to say. But It's some of the things that are striking me as you are talking. In terms of, well, these days I've taken to calling conflict fractal. And by that I mean that in any conflict, we can see the dynamics of all conflicts. And of course, they differ in severity. So we have, the rape of a, just recently I was working with a woman whose daughter was raped by a 14-year-old when the daughter was 8 years old, and she was struggling with these issues of being a victim at the same time with trying to consider restorative approaches to the situation. And you know, I think partly what we're asking the world to do in the conflict resolution world is to take responsibility in relationship, which means giving up being a victim, but it's not so easy to change from being a victim to being a participant in the relationship that is created by the harm. And, you know, in that case, she did not ask to be in relationship with the boy who raped her daughter, but she was forced to be in relationship. And then what does she do? Does she ignore that relationship and let that boy, go to prison on his own and forget about it? And does that serve her own healing as well? And so she struggles with that, and it's a real struggle. And we could talk much more about that. I won't say more about that just because of time. But the other thing that's striking me is that when we talk about the psychology that is involved in resolving conflict, partly we're talking about narratives, the narratives we tell of what the conflict is. And when we my sense is, and I don't know if you would agree with this, but in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, as one of those large conflicts, one of the large fractals, if truly both sides could completely appreciate the other side's experience and feel heard by the other side, then there would be a higher likelihood that there could be a resolution or a healing. But our ability to do that, to deeply hear, is blocked by various psychological experiences or stances. And I think it's interesting.
Another thing, which is in the conciliation difficulties between nations versus what you have in persons, which is also complicated, but sometimes you don't have it. And it's chosen traumas, you know. When you have a nation, then you can easily, at any point, you can say, aha, you want to say this and this, but please remember that 200 years, 50 years, 20 years ago, you did this and this and this and this. Now, this is a very, very strong thing. And for example, any Arab and any Jewish people can bring it up, you know. So in addition to the narrative of the here and now process and conflict, and there is this chosen traumas, which it gives a kind of a different color to everything, you know. The Jewish people, they easily say, now, let's say if you think about the Iranian or the Arab Spring, where a lot of people in Egypt are saying, let's stop having this peace treaty with Israel. So many people in Israel, when they hear it, they take it to the chosen trauma, which is the Holocaust.
So
when you go to the Holocaust, it's like you say, aha, you want to exterminate us. So, okay, we start from number one, you know, it's like it changes the reconciliation process completely,
mm-hmm.
because Israelis, for example, they say never again, you know. So we are crazy, and we'll go into war with everyone who threatens us. Anyway.
Uh-huh. I understand. Very good point. I'll just rephrase it a little bit. Maybe I don't need to. I'm sure that was clear enough. I think that was quite clear enough. Anyone else want to make a comment? Or
I
ask
would
a
like
question?
To make a comment on this.
Oh,
can I just put some
more? Please,
Yeah, considering the way of what my friend said about the victim, and he used the issue of rape, and I think it is not a coincidence bringing the issue of rape into this. The issue of rape sometimes pops up in the dynamics, and very interesting about that, the narrative of being oppressed and being raped is inside, I say, sometimes more the Palestinian narrative. And as Robbie said, the chosen trauma, the narrative of the chosen trauma, is the Holocaust, and from the Jewish or Israeli side. But in the other issues, if I say that, it's about victimhood. And when they say the most challenging, it is the most challenging question. I feel it very vividly challenging in my work. Is I can just consolidate that in one question. Is the question is, what serves the existence beyond the choice of victimhood? Can we, what are there other pathways that can be searched and looked forward in order to live and to co-live beyond a choice, the default choice of being a victim sometimes?
Yeah.
Can something take care of me beside or without waiving my sense of victimhood? And
yes.
In considering in a very narrative way, and this is a very striking sentence that one of the participants said to the Palestinian woman, Jewish woman, that said to a Palestinian woman in one of my groups, said, told her, your dream, and she told her that way, your dream, lady, is my nightmare.
Yeah.
And I think this is the common ground of working together, that how the dream and the fantasies and the wish things from that whole one side can be reacted or can do to the other side. And this is the narrative that we have to seek on. Sometimes the opposite narrative. But the two narratives must be both, must be both. Hello?
Yes.
I said the two narratives must be voiced. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
I'm finished.
Thank you. Thank you very much, both of you. Anyone else?
May I say something?
Alex, yes.
Yes. I'm very touched by the work you are doing, because I feel it's incredibly important. And I have some time ago I met a man who was involved in conflict as well, and he says he's a conflict manager. And he said his experience is that people need to know exactly the points about which they disagree with each other. And as soon as they know exactly the points about which they disagree, they can live with the disagreement. And that's something that makes me think about, I feel very connected to that statement.
Mm-hmm.
And further, I wonder, do you work with the nonviolent communication skills from Marshall Rosenberg? I think he has done a lot of interesting work, and he developed. His principle is that every human being that has a common ground, and that conflicts do not have no impact in that common ground. And if the people start to understand each other, each other's point of view, each other's way of thinking and feeling about things that happened completely, so that one can express what the other feels and what the other thinks. And when so the both parties get complete understanding of each other and how the other came to their feelings, to their opinions. If there is complete understanding, then the understanding goes below the source of the conflict, and the parties reach the common ground. And as soon as the parties reach that common ground, they have an inner will to find solutions for every problem they have. And there is compassion with each other.
The gentleman could send us this, article or whatever. It would be good, but the content, I agree completely. It would be great to have it. It's in practice, it's not so easy to get to it because people are so emotionally involved. And when you start talking, some people are post-traumatic. Some people are still bleeding, from injuries, you want to talk about things, and people are so inside their own narrative, they can't really listen. So this is one of the things Nimer, I think, tried to...
Yeah, the most difficult things is to sharpen the awareness toward the emotional and to the emotional and psychological state of mind, in one of the participants, and to bring the mind to figure out the personal narrative and the personal issue around what has been talked about. In the last 2 years, I've been very aware that the personal narrative is very adhesive, is very attaching, and bringing others to recall and memorize and even to think about and to symbolize the other more vividly and in a very more humanistic way when I have one story in my mind. Even a very personal story. Okay. And I think what makes the Holocaust is very vivid in the Jewish memory is not what was had in a very general, in a very collective, not that alone. What makes the Holocaust very, very experienced and memorized is the very, 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 very touching personal stories inside the Holocaust. So I think the Palestinians sometimes, or maybe, they are missing this. The Palestinians have their own responsibility to memorize and to personalize the Palestinian narrative. They are not leading this in a very good way. They are reacting to the Jewish Israelis, and they are doing what the Israelis have been doing in the last 3 or 4 decades. And now they are taking sometimes the role of the Israeli and Jews for the last 40 or 50 years. So I'm telling the Palestinians, wake up. Okay, this is what the Jews and Israel did in the last 50 years. Let's try to do something else. To be a victim and to be a victimhood, it is not the default. And it is not that very successful, I have to say. And
beautiful.
The personal stories of the Nakba, what touched me so deeply is just the personal stories of the Nakba. I live here in Haifa, and my parents, I have also a very personal story with the Nakba. Okay? And what touched me very deeply is the personal story of the people here in Haifa and on the Galilee. The personal stories in the Nakba. It's a very, very touching, tearfully touching. But this is what the Palestinian must do, I think, to collect the personal narrative and to conceal it afterward to a general narrative. Without doing that, without naming every narrative, we will not succeed as the Palestinians in moving on. We will not. And if we want to experience that, we have our own responsibility to bring this narrative, personal narrative, our dreams, our unconscious dreams as well.
I'm very touched by this program. I hope I didn't cut anyone off. If there's anyone else who wants to speak, I want to make room for them.
I have a brief comment from Joel.
Okay, Joel Zebrak.
Yes, I'm a little concerned about the issue of when will be an appropriate time to reach a resolution. I understand the concept of the importance of dialogue, but it's been 60 years or plus, and at some point, many of us as mediators want to reach some durable resolution of a problem, and this is difficult when the common ground that we seek is what the very essence of the dispute is about that common ground, and the concept of your dream is my nightmare is just the sort of the heart of the problem. How do we work around that so that everyone can enjoy a dream, their dream.
Well, I don't know. Maybe Nimer has it, because we are the minority here, you know, Israelis, in this area. The Jewish are a minority. Nimer, you know, knows what the majority thinks about. For us, we have tried to, you know, it has really different narratives. And I don't know if this resolution is at all close. I have the feeling the resolution gets further and further away at this time. I think there will be a reshuffling of all the positions, and I'm sorry to say this, but people who mediate, if they have a chance, they will have to start from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, when I cited this interaction, I said, your dream is my nightmare. It is at the same time trying to emphasize how difficult is the situation, but at the same time is to voice the unwanted. And the unwanted is that my dream is not your nightmare. Actually, mm-hmm. This is what I want to say, that to reach one, the ways that we can reach the atmosphere or the space where we can work together in a shared dreams, in a shared dreams, and in a shared wanted things that we want to have together. The other things that deciphering, I can say that exactly, and is how much the word cooperation is very, very helpful. And I think that we can use it as a very, very, sharp goal that, and try to understand that resolution and the word conflict resolution is a very, very big and hot issue. Maybe we are not capable of doing that at this time, as Robbie said. But I think in a very practical way, there are much more to do in order to seek cooperations. I'm becoming very alert to the fact that when Jews and Arabs are working together in one institution, in one company, in one organization, they are handling themselves very well, I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
When they are having some goal or a common goal that they have to cooperate within themselves, they can reach something. And the word cooperation is, I like that more than a conflict resolution. I like Imran to take this more, a cooperation. And there's another thing that I learned about cooperation, that the most successful cooperation are based on differences.
Yes.
And when we seek that the goals are cooperations, I think it is more clear it can be done. And the word and the terminology of conflict resolutions or anything like that, anything of these synonyms, it is very difficult to reach. Sometimes it is impossible. And we have to admit sometimes it is impossible.
I mean, I'm just going to make one comment about that, which is that it's almost always when we admit it's impossible that we can reach resolution. As long as we're trying, experience is when we're trying. I'm sorry?
I want just to refine that, if you can. Let me do that, please. When we admit that this is impossibilities, there is a chance of cooperation.
Yes, yes. That's another way, yes. And my feeling is that until you get there, you don't resolve. I've written an article about this, as some people know, but it is the realization of the impossibility, the hopelessness, and the depth of people working that will resolve it eventually, or maybe it won't, but it's the impossibility that's the freedom That's my own comment. Thank you for the way you put that.
Are we meaning impossibility, meaning the same as impasse?
I was talking more on an emotional level, but yes, usually it requires an impasse, a real acknowledgement that nobody can do anything or something to give. That's my experience. You, anyone else have a comment that they want to? They could make it brief so we could receive comments from Robbie and Nimra. That would be wonderful.
Hi, this is Ron. A couple of things. First of all, the notion of collaboration and not seeking agreement is something that is somewhat difficult for us in Israelis, and I welcome it as a very important change of mindset, where sometimes our anxiety and our need to have firm answers drag us to be bottom-line oriented. Indeed, dialogue is very much about opening up without necessarily having an agreement in mind. Another thing that I wanted to share is that I just fear that we would put too much on the notion of victimhood, indeed very central and so important. I just want to make sure that we don't just try to boil it down all to just changing a sense of victimhood. That's all.
Okay. I think we have time for one more comment from Nimer and Ravi, and then maybe we'll just take our wonderful feast and live with that for a few months or something. Any comments, Nimer, Ravi?
Yeah, I just want to say very shortly, the issue of guilt and the issue of victimhood, actually it's the first step in the mediation, in the political mediation here. It's the first step, I think, in many mediations. It's not to take responsibility for further growth. It's a difficult step for many people, you know. And to stay in a way immature or a victim, this has a lot of power. And I think I agree with Niemer. It's sometimes very, very strong and very emotionally strong position, and people use it and abuse it. But actually, there are many, many other things. The other things I want to say is, from the beginning of this session, there was the question of what does it mean to resolve something, you know, to get to a better position. And I think one of the things is that mature people can have two narratives, one next to another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And conflicting narratives. But actually, it's very difficult to achieve this. Is it clear what I'm saying?
Yes.
So many people think what I need is A. Now the other person says it's B. To say that it's both A and B, or let's put it together, it's a very difficult process, and many, many people don't achieve it. And one of the main things in our groups is to try to bring people to accept that there are other narratives and let it be next to each other. But, you know, religious people or very politically committed people, strongly believing people are very difficult, have very great difficulty with this. So this is what I wanted to say.
Wonderful. Thank you. Nimer, do you have one point, and then I think we should probably adjourn?
I think, I do agree with Robbie, what he said about taking up more than one narrative in the mind. and try to seek a place in for the two narratives minimum in my mind. And I think it's very difficult to take it. It's very difficult to acknowledge the wounds of the Holocaust and what did the Holocaust to the Jewish people, and at the same time to acknowledge my own wounds of the Nakba. But it doesn't mean that the Holocaust did the Nakba. Doesn't mean that. It means that how can I embrace, how can take the two narratives in my mind and try to live with the two narratives.
Right.
Mm-hmm. This is the most challenging, I think.
Beautiful.
And sometimes for people it is impossible task. It is an impossible task because it does not serve their existence, as I said 20 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Night.